Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, it's baby season for many goat breeders in Iowa. We'll talk about the challenges of kidding in the middle of winter. But first, our oceans are choked with plastic waste, and 40 million people in the world need prosthetic limbs. Many of them are unable to access this life-changing technology because of cost. Those two facts seem unrelated, but Chris Moriarty found a powerful connection, and that led to the founding of the nonprofit A Million Waves. Based in Seattle, they use 3D printing technology to turn ocean plastic into prosthetic limbs. Chris Moriarty grew up in Pella, Iowa. He and his wife, Laura, met at UNI and are the co-founders of this nonprofit, and Chris is with me on the line right now. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today, and I want to talk about that aha moment that you had. You live near the ocean now, and you saw that kind of plastic waste washing up on the shore every day, right?
We do, and it's one of those things that with my Midwest roots, I can remember back in 1993 when Ted Danson went on the radio and told us the oceans were going to be dead in 10 years. And I remember thinking, well, wait a minute, I haven't even seen it yet. And it kind of just planted all of this sort of protectionist element in me from a pretty young age being a Midwest guy. So up here where we live, I actually literally live on an island up in the San Juan Islands north of Seattle. And I see it with different eyes than the people who might have grown up here. So when I see a plastic bottle or a wrapper, it's one of those things I believe it's my responsibility to grab it. And then, of course, the passion kind of took off from there.
Well, and a lot of people are concerned about ocean waste, but let's talk about that other part of the equation. When did you start thinking about prosthetic limbs?
So, yeah, the whole story is just almost a struck by lightning moment. When I was still at UNI, for whatever reason, at the age of 22, I kind of stopped being able to sleep through the night. I'd wake up in the middle of the night with just ideas, and I'd just get so involved in them. Some of the ideas were great. Some of them were less than great, but this was one of those moments. I literally last April woke up in the middle of the night, and I'd been reading a lot about the ocean plastic problem, being that the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is now twice the size of the state of Texas. Obviously, that's alarming and hard to even wrap your mind around. And then for whatever reason, I remembered this YouTube video I'd seen where somebody had been using a 3D printer to make prosthetics. And at that point in time with 3D printing, it had pretty much been relegated to kind of desktop knickknacks and nothing really truly useful, at least from a home-based standpoint. And all of a sudden I started thinking, well, wait a minute, if we basically have this unlimited, unwanted resource, and we have all these folks who are in desperate need of some help and attention, why doesn't somebody put those two things together? And then I thought, well, why don't I put those two things together? And, of course, as my wife reminded me, the reason that it shouldn't be us is because we had zero experience in 3D printing. We had zero experience in prosthetics. We didn't even know anyone who needed a prosthetic. So we literally started at less than zero with this project, and it took off so fast and so furiously that we can't believe it.
Well, what is your background? What's your day job?
Yeah, so I'm a business consultant. So I work primarily with dentists, believe it or not, across the country, helping them grow their businesses. And that's how I've spent my time. So I guess I've got a knack for creative problem solving to begin with. And I love a challenge. So it was one of those things where when this idea was born, I was actually flying to Detroit to give a lecture. And I had my wife, who owns a marketing and content creation agency. I said, can you just make a website? Like just kind of a mock-up thing of this idea. I want to bounce it off this group, and I just want to see if we can get any traction. And it went over so well that we said, we should really take a run at this. And we started making phone calls. And what we found was basically an army of motivated people just asking how they could help. And the whole thing came together, and we launched this company in under 2 weeks.
Wow.
And we were able to help our first child in less than 1 month. And that was our whole goal. We were like, well, what if we could just help one kid? And from there, it's just taken off. And now it's an international effort. In February, I'm actually flying down to Sao Paulo Brazil to give a lecture to 100,000 people at an event. I mean, this thing has gotten so big and so meaningful, I would have never imagined.
Well, tell me how it works. Where are you getting the plastic from, for example?
Yeah, so initially it was just ground and pound. I mean, we have three children, and so my wife and I, we would just walk around and pick up water bottles because it really only takes about 30 water bottles to make one hand. And most of the programs that are out there to kind of help and assist you are all open source. There are so many people out there just sharing designs, sharing techniques, and we wouldn't be anywhere without folks like a company called Enable and a bunch of others. So what we would do is we'd take the water bottles, we would bring them back to our house and sit in the garage, and initially with a pair of scissors, we'd cut them up, and then we'd put them through a cross-cut paper shredder just like you'd have in your office, and we'd grind it all up, and then we'd send it to this company in Vermont, and they would turn into filament and send it back, and that was our process for a long time until we were able to get the funding to where now we have a commercial shredder that was custom built for us by a gentleman in Portland, and we grind up the bottles that are coming from either our local beaches. We've got partnerships with Surf Riders Foundations, NOAA, Washington Coast Savers. We get bottles shipped to us from all around the world, Ghana, Brazil, Australia, Belgium, anybody and everywhere. We want to try to make it as global as possible, because that's what people kind of fail to really recognize, is that when a water bottle falls in the ocean in the Philippines and it winds up here, like, it's everybody's problem. So we will take it, and we'll take it from anywhere. So we grind them all up and process it down into these granules, and then it goes into a machine called an extruder. And what this extruder does is it heats and cools these various elements at a very specific rate, travels over an air path and directly onto a spooler, and through our various sponsorships and support, we now have the technology to where we can make 10 spools per hour, and each spool can create two limbs. So as we're ramping up, I mean, the amount of people we're able to help is, we're getting there.
Now, you mentioned that you didn't have a background in 3D printing, and you don't do the printing yourself, right?
We do.
Okay,
but
there's
two parts to this. So we know, we wanted to make sure that this program was never about us and what Chris and Laura were doing. What we wanted to do was make sure that people who are looking to do something had a place to go and a role to play. You know, it's interesting just listening to the news before we jumped on here. I think a lot of folks in the country were just hungry for some positivity. And there's an element of our country that I get to see every day that most people don't. I mean, for every child that or family that reaches out and asks for help, I bet I get 20, 30 emails from people just asking how they can help. So while we're able to print what we can ourselves, there's a network of vetted printers through our partnership with Enable, where there's 2,300 printers around the country, basically on standby. So there's folks in, again, the Philippines and otherwhere where we might just send them the materials and print them on site so we can ensure a proper fitting for the child. And without them, we wouldn't have the reach that we do.
How do you connect with people who are in need of a prosthetic limb?
Yeah, and again, that Enable was one of those folks where they were sort of the initial mechanism to sort of pair folks who are looking for a limb. But what was interesting about that is, you know, for every one person that was looking, you probably had a dozen folks willing to help. And once we kind of got the word out, most folks do come to us directly now, just through our media involvement. And most of the international folks come to us directly, and then it's up to us to kind of figure out how to get them there, ensure a proper fitting, get measurements, and all those things. But it's we're just glad that they do.
And right now you're focusing on prosthetic hands, is that right?
Yeah, so the term that the children and the families use is limb different. So it could be anything from a child missing all the way down to, and I say child because that was the initial kind of goal or focus. But what's nuts is, like, now we've helped people up into their 70s. And, in fact, this was great. I mentioned how I fly around and lecture a little bit. This was like 2 months maybe into when we started. And a dentist down in Texas had supported a child, and I just happened to be with him at this event. And the person who had received his donation was a 27-year-old in the Philippines. Well, they certainly got the internet in the Philippines, and she actually took to Facebook, tracked him down, and thanked him publicly. And I just happened to be there. And you could see his whole the world got really small for that guy really fast. Because here he thought, you know, he was just doing something to kind of help a buddy out. I've known him for a long time. And all of a sudden, him seeing the direct impact of where his dollars went, and that is an actual person somewhere, and their life's different now because of him. And that's something that's often lacking in philanthropy. You throw dollars at a cause because you care, but you don't really know where those dollars went. And so with our project, it's 100% volunteer. You know, we don't take a nickel. So every dollar that goes in the top goes directly into the program and to a child. And while we can't ensure that the donor will know everything about the recipient, we can usually give basic demographics. Like it's an 8-year-old in Florida or something to that effect. But usually the families are quite willing to share pictures, and we'll get little videos from the kids or adults. And that's so wonderful. But even if you don't know their name, that person will always know yours. So they'll know who provided the funds for their limb or what organization or whatever it would be. And we just want people to feel sort of the impact of really what they're doing.
And I think I heard the very same news story that you did about using 3D printing technology to create prosthetic hands, which is quite an amazing story in and of itself. But what makes this technology so good for that kind of prosthesis?
Well, and the timing couldn't be better. So number one, obviously when it comes to children being limb different, oftentimes with their insurance, they can usually get something, but often it's an immobile hand, just kind of sits there. And what we found is that a lot of children, they're resistant to prosthetics because they don't want to attract attention to what they believe makes them different. And what we found is with 3D printing, we have we have basically unlimited capability. We've made hands with Minecraft themes. There's one that has a Frozen theme. We have a gentleman that airbrushes them. We've made him Seahawks colors up here in Seattle. We can do anything, and it's in the stories we hear back are that these children are no longer nearly as self-conscious. And in fact, they're proud. We have one kid. Kids came up on the playground. Are you going to be in a movie? You know, they'd seen Iron Man and all these kind of fun things.
And we're going to have to take a short break, Chris, and we'll find out more in just a moment. I'm talking with Chris Moriarty. He is one of the founders of the nonprofit A Million Waves. They take plastic taken out of oceans, reclaimed from oceans, and recycle it into prosthetic limbs using 3D printing technology. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, an entrepreneurial support organization and coworking community with locations in Valley Junction and downtown Des Moines. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Work better. Work together.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about a nonprofit right now called A Million Waves. And this nonprofit has connected all of that plastic choking our oceans with the need for prosthetic limbs around the world. I'm talking with one of the founders, Chris Moriarty, who grew up in Pella, Iowa, and he and his wife, Laura, founded A Million Waves. They take plastic bottles, recycle them, and using 3D printing technology, create prosthetic limbs. And Chris, just before the break, you were telling me about how with many of the children you've been able to connect with, they get to have limbs that are, or hands that are, and or arms that are created in their favorite colors or something that's
exactly
Cool and becomes really symbolic for them. Now, I say prosthetic limbs, but right now, because of the strength of this plastic, you can't really do like a prosthetic leg or a prosthetic foot, right?
Yeah, and we've certainly dabbled in that arena. And typically when we do get a request like that, we really want to make sure that if they do want something that it's strictly for aesthetic purposes, maybe they just have something that's different, they want to wear pants or anything where they need to have them filled out, but structurally it's just not there. And of course, we never want to put anybody into a position to where they could potentially be harmed or at risk in any way. What we love about the limbs themselves is that they're so lightweight that, of course, for a child, we don't want it to be burdensome. And we also want kids to be kids. There's a beautiful story that happened literally just this week, a little boy in Kansas who we printed a limb for late last year. It's winter, obviously, and he was out playing and slipped on the ice and broke his arm, but he broke his prosthetic arm. And with a traditional prosthetic, getting another one or getting it repaired would be, it could be obviously financially prohibitive, where for us it was no big deal. You know, we were able to print another one. We're shipping it out today. It took us 2 days to get it printed and put together, and he's back in the game. And that's what we're going for, is these kids out there being rough and tumble, and we don't want parents or the children to have to worry about if something were to happen, because we want these children to grow. We know that their tastes and passions and whatnot are going to change, and we don't want them to be restricted in any way.
Well, so, and in speaking of growth, I mean, just physical growth, kids can outgrow a prosthetic arm or hand really quickly, right?
Exactly. And of course, that was some of the natural reluctance, because they grow so quickly. Well, when's the right time? When's the right time in their life socially? So it's really quite it puts the parents in a very difficult situation. And we just wanted to take that stress away. They don't worry about it. So when the families reach out, we don't ask any questions. I don't care who you are. You want us to help, we're going to help. So you want a hand, you want another one next week? Great, we'll do it. You know, we just want to take any bit of that stress away that we can.
How much does it cost to create one of these limbs?
So our primary fundraiser, the way that we drive revenues, is people buy a keychain from us. And a keychain costs $45. And with that $45, we're able to fully make that hand, ship that hand back and forth, everything that we need to anywhere in the world. So the manufacturing costs for us are certainly actually, the shipping costs are the dominant element of that, being that we don't want the family to put up a nickel if that limb arrives and it's not comfortable. We want them to send it back. We don't want them to get their wallets out ever. We want to take care of it. And the $45 will cover any bit of that.
Do you work with the doctors of the children that you're printing these limbs for?
Typically, it's through the family.
Okay.
You know, the family one-on-one is really about all we need. We just began a conversation with Doctors Without Borders, who obviously they've been doing a lot of work in Syria, where there's a serious, serious need. But for the most part, there's really not a – we have an orthopedic surgeon who sits on our board who's local here. His wife, Jody, who is was an oncology nurse for children for years and years and years. She oversees all of the assembly. So we have medical personnel that work directly with each and every hand that goes out, because it needs to be perfect. It needs to be functional, and it needs to be appropriate on all levels.
Well, you mentioned your work with Doctors Without Borders. Tell me how that connection was made.
And that was through Dr. Jonathan Schaefer, who sits on our board, to where obviously as he's gone out and, of course, fallen in love with the project just as we have, they actually reached out to him and about some of the stuff that they'd been doing, and that was just last week. So it's we're pretty excited to get the ball rolling with them, because with our capabilities, we've got between us, I think we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, we've got about 8 printers ourselves, but think about the network that we have through Enable of 2,300 vetted printers. And with basically unlimited resources and the plastic at our disposal, there's no reason that anybody anywhere can't get the help if they want it.
Well, and you mentioned doing work in Syria. Of course, Syria has been engaged in a terrible civil war. So many people have been injured. So we have been talking mostly about your work with children. But in Syria, is the idea that you're also working with anybody of any age who may have lost a limb?
Anybody and everybody. And again, this is when we began this, you know, we thought about it in children in mind, mostly because of that growth and cost factor, the burden to the family. But what we found internationally is that there are certain even work requirements. And one of the things that, you know, we're learning so much as we go, but there's a lot of ways to lose a limb. I hate to say that so crudely, but whether you were just simply born that way or through trauma. And through trauma, in most circumstances, you don't really know. There's nothing uniform about it. Where in the United States, we're used to outcomes of medical procedures being fairly tidy. Around the world, not necessarily. So we rely on a network of 3D engineers, one primarily in the Philippines, another one in Kansas, where they can adapt our designs to be able to accommodate folks who might have been a victim of something pretty traumatic, like in Syria or other conflicts around the world. So we've kind of, even though we focused initially on children, now I would almost say it's 50-50. in terms of adults and children that we help.
Is it important to you that this plastic that you're using continues to be reclaimed from the ocean? I mean, there's a lot of recycling that's not really happening out there away from water as well.
Oh, that's just it. And it's what we've loved about this entire project is the folks from everywhere. If you don't even have access to an ocean, we get boxes and boxes of people's water bottles from all over the country. And when we on International Beach Cleanup Day, we remind people that, you know, water's water. So I don't care if it's a river, if it's a lake, if it's the ocean. The ocean was obviously our primary driver, and we do try to we do sort it as such based on location, type, and sourcing. We want to be true to our word that if something's ocean plastic, it is ocean plastic. And if something has come from another source, that's okay too. There's an organization down in Seattle that has 6 warehouses full of a specific type of plastic that primarily has come from old car dashboards. I mean, there's all these things that are just going to wind up in the ground that we can use to make useful things. And in fact, there's a gentleman in Oregon working on a new machine for us that was funded actually in part by Shell Oil, of all people, right? And what this machine can do is basically take all these various plastics from almost anywhere and puts it into a mold of your choosing, everything from 2x4s for general building material. You can make planks. You can make anything and everything. So you can make structures, and that's really where this is kind of growing, is that let's take this refuse, turn it into a resource, and especially for a lot of these more remote countries, this resource can then drive small microeconomies, where for $10,000 you can set up a small, almost factory anywhere within a shipping container that now folks have a reason, they have an impetus to go in and pick up this plastic and turn it into something that's useful or that they could sell or whatever it may be. And that's where this thing gets really powerful and from a macroeconomic standpoint.
Why is it important to you that you're running a nonprofit? I mean, this seems like it could be a great business model in and of itself.
And a lot of that came from, this is a funny story. I was attending a business lecture in Jamaica, of all places, which people always hear about my business travel. Like, oh, that must be so nice. And I go, the temperature of a Marriott is the same anywhere. I'm just inside. Don't get lost in the location. Anyway, this gentleman was getting a lecture about connecting philanthropic purposes along with your business and how those two things can coexist, and you can doing good while doing good kind of a thing. And all of a sudden, I started thinking about it, and I was like, I would get so wrapped up in the day-to-day and growing businesses myself through my occupation. I was like, oh, my God, I don't think I care about anything. And what I meant by, I know that sounds really weird, but what I meant was I didn't really have a cause. And our family's been so passionate about sailing and being around the ocean and scuba diving, being a Midwest guy. Like, if I see so much as a starfish out here, it might as well be a unicorn to me. And I was like, whoa. So as we started investigating this, I wanted to do something, I guess, for lack of a better term, just pure, you know, since so much of my day is just spent on business and making some tough decisions sometimes. And part of it, too, the people that we met, the spirit was sharing, meaning that we didn't create these fundamental designs. People shared them with us. Like when this gentleman built this machine, a guy in Finland provided part of the plans for that. So it was in the spirit of what got this thing out of the gates that we wanted to be committed to that as well. So there's so many companies and large philanthropic organizations out there that are making millions and billions of dollars a year, but I don't think people are feeling the change. And we just wanted to be a little bit different and say, you know what, I'd rather affect a billion people than make $1 billion at this point. We're fine. You know, our family's been blessed in so many different ways that I want to do something that just to get people motivated who are just like me and, you know, maybe didn't really have a cause, because this is something, it's non-political. Like, it's not about big business versus small business. And we get pigeonholed like that a lot. Like, a lot of folks will come to us thinking that because we recycle plastic that we're inherently anti-business. And especially when as it relates to straws and various things. And I tell everyone the same thing. The minute I see an oil executive march a garbage bag full of plastic straws down to the beach and whip it into the sea, well, then, you know, I'll go out for them. But until then, it's on all of us. Like, we use 500 million plastic drinking straws every day. this is all of us people. You know what I mean? It's not an us versus them. It's that if we have enough people mobilized to make a small dent, all those small dents add up. And these problems can, in part, we don't have to wait for anyone to save us, because I hate to break it to you, if you're waiting for that, they're not coming. No, nobody's coming. So we got to either get in the fight or stop complaining about it. So it really wanted to be kind of through that philosophy that we kept it a nonprofit.
3D printing technology is getting to be more and more accessible to more people. Do you hear from a lot of people who say, hey, I have this printer and I would love to be a part of what you're doing?
Oh, absolutely. And if you already have one, obviously our partnership through Enable allows people to print a hand on their own just with their normal filament and submit it to get on an approved list of vetted printers. But what's more interesting than that is the folks that we attract who are like me, where they say, you know what, I want to do this. I don't have a 3D printer. Which one do I need so I can print hands? And I think that's the beautiful thing about it, because we didn't know either. You know, and we went in and just bought printers. And honestly, for the first printer we bought, we could have bought five less expensive printers that would have done just the same amount of quality. We just didn't know. So now it's one of those things that we're happy that we're giving people something to do, as opposed to just kind of waiting. And there's such an action-oriented element to it that people are drawn to it. And like I said, from an idea I had at 2 a.m. to where we are today, I just want anybody to know, like, you could not start a project with less knowledge than I did. So if you've got a passion, if I'm going to fail, I'm going to fail big. So, you know, go for it.
How many limbs have you printed up to this point?
So we've provided materials for, because again, with all the on-site printing and filament, and all these people that are all over the globe, sort of a deal, we've sent dozens and dozens of kits and materials that are out to those folks. I think in our house we've printed, I think it's 40 or so, just ourselves. And then as capabilities really ramped up, it's kind of this interesting thing. You know, it went from 1 to 3 to 5 to 8. And so it's cycling up and up and up as our capabilities go. But one of the things that we've realized is that if we're going to make the impact that we want to, it's going to be with this network of printers that are out there. So our goal for 2019 is, because of our ability to create so much filament, we want to be able to provide 2 spools of the recycled plastic to any vetted 3D printer that's out there, because that's how you get that multiplier, right? We know where our limitations are going to fall. So if we know that each person willing has the capability to basically create 4 limbs themselves times over 2,000 printers that are out there, I mean, you can't underestimate the amount of impact that we can have. It's just literally a matter of coordination at this point.
A lot of people obviously are inspired by your idea and want to get involved in what you're doing. And of course, they can find out all about it on your website as well. But what is your message to people who look around the world and see so many problems like the waste in the ocean, and so many of us feel really helpless? What is your message?
Well, and that's really what it boiled down to, is that when you see something that seems so insurmountable, like you, and number one, I would say my, I guess I don't know why I didn't think about this. You think someone else is handling it. You think that it's so big, somebody must be working on this. A large government or some sort of institution is tackling these problems. And when you look really closely, you're like, they're not. Nobody is. And so, okay, well, it's not about sweeping reform. You know, big change is never anything that most people can sustain. So what I encourage people to do is just look around for incremental improvement. I don't have a plastic-free house. I got two kids, and one of them's a 3 kids now. One's new, so I'm still altering those numbers. But, you know, we have a normal life, right? We get too many boxes from Amazon. You know, we get all the things. But it's about just looking and being more thoughtful with our actions every day. You know, not just saying, hey, I don't need that straw. You know, looking at, as you're wrapping things at Christmas specifically, do I really need all of this plastic? Could I put something else in here? And just making incremental improvement every day. And enough people do that, that's what it's about. And if you look at the numbers from, say, great example, the bell ringers at Christmas, if you look at their financials, You know, they make more money from people just a change in their pockets than they do from all the other corporate donations added up. It's about everybody. It's about everybody just doing a little bit better and making sure that we're doing it for the right reasons. I don't care what the politicians think. It's not about that. Like, it's not about me versus them. It's about I could be a little bit better today than I was yesterday. And if I keep doing that, well, I'm going to get closer to being the me that this world probably needs as opposed to who I probably really am.
Well, but Chris, yeah. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Well, my hat's off, and like I said, being from Iowa and Iowa native, being on this program really does mean a lot to me, and I thank you for having me.
Chris Moriarty is one of the founders, along with his wife, Laura Moriarty, of the nonprofit organization A Million Waves. They're based in Seattle and use 3D printing technology to turn ocean plastic into prosthetic limbs. You can find out more about what they're doing on their website, millionwavesproject.com. Coming up in just a moment, something completely different. It's baby season for a lot of goat breeders around the state. We'll find out what's going on. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.